shorter.
My name is Dante Williams. I am 36 years old. Today is July 28th, 2017. Our location is CRA, and my relationship to the interviewee is Advocate.
My name is Caleb Wells. I'm 35 years of age. Today's date is the 28th of July. The location is CRA, and I am the partner, Caleb Wells. Wait, you're the relationship to the Advocate is the partner.
Well, Caleb, thanks a lot for coming in, and we really appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us today. You know, I had a chance to hear a little bit about your story, and you know, you've led a very interesting life, and you told me a little bit about, you know, why you're here today to be an advocate and to speak to us. So before we get into that, let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
I'm 35 years old. I'm originally from New Orleans, Louisiana. I moved up to Chicago in 2012 because the VA hospital in New Orleans had never reopened a lot of their services after Hurricane Katrina. And I had a surgery I needed done due to traumatic brain injury I received in a bomb blast in Iraq and a gunshot wound. And I ended up staying just because they offered a lot of social services that aren't available in Louisiana. And the VA was a lot more accessible here. I have two kids. I just lost my mother, who also had hepatitis C last year to a drug overdose, and just had a son three months ago. So.
Wow. Well, that's I don't think I've ever said to anyone, you know, I'm sorry to hear that, and congratulations.
Right.
And
you hear that? So.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm sorry to hear about your mom, and congratulations on the birth of your child. You know, you mentioned the VA and, you know, your service in the military, and I want to say thank you for your service, because you've been through a lot.
Thank you.
You know, we're not going to get too far into everything on the recording, but, you know, you've been through a lot, and I definitely appreciate you.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that you lost your mother to Hep C, and you're now struggling with cancer.
She actually had Hep C, but she died of a drug overdose.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. And so your mother having Hep C, and you know, you're aware of your status. Tell me a little bit about how you learned about the diagnosis.
I knew a lot about Hep C because growing up, my mother was infected. I remember when she got infected, and they took us to get all the A and B vaccinations and whatnot at an early age, and she suffered a lot from it. Especially she spent a lot of time. She spent ten of the last 11 years of her life in the penitentiary, and had a lot of liver problems then that weren't because of her situation and where she was at, they weren't able to give her the treatment she needed. I learned of my diagnosis in 2012, I believe. I knew I had exposed myself, and had pretty much expected it, I guess, before then. So,
So in 2012, you learned about your diagnosis. How did that impact your life?
At the time, not at all. I was still in a very extreme portion of my, a very low point is my addiction, and that was just one of the many risky behaviors I was engaging in at the time. So at the time it didn't, but as I'm getting a little bit older and starting to have a little bit other health problems, it's concerning me a lot more, just because on top of a lot everything else, it's just one more thing I have to worry about. And also because I didn't immediately follow up with treatment, like I didn't know for a long time how it stood and how it's going to affect me later. I've watched several members of my family that suffer through liver cirrhosis due to Hep C. So,
wow. So this isn't a disease that just impacted you and your mother. This sounds like something that has impacted, you know, your family as a whole.
A lot of people, especially when, New Orleans, as far as having, even before this last 10 or 15 years where they called the so-called heroin or opiate epidemic, these cities have always been a real big, have always had a real big population that struggled with heroin use, and due to a lot of services, for whatever reason that the government seems to not agree with harm reduction, it was just starting to change a little bit, but you know, the fact that they had needle exchanges and things weren't available, it was a lot easier to get. I mean, my mom's generation, I mean, my mom lived on the streets in the French Quarter in New Orleans. She grew up there from the time she was 11, and just as a little child, I just remember her losing friends to HIV and AIDS and Hep C and different diseases that could have easily been prevented or at least contained a lot better if there were more harm reduction practices.
Yeah. You know, I just don't understand the idiocy of going against harm reduction. You know, the end result of not having harm reduction is an epidemic, you know, a public health epidemic. And, you know, people take that moral high ground of not supporting substance use, but at the same time, by taking that stance, you are creating an epidemic amongst your people.
I mean, it's ridiculous. They put seatbelts in cars, they say lives, they don't say, you know, or that's bad.
No, that's good.
I can't really finish up, but you know what I'm saying? They don't say stop driving or don't put seatbelts in because it'll make people feel more comfortable that they can drive faster because they know they have a seatbelt. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are, it's a safety measure. People are going to break the law. They're going to get in accidents. They're going to, you know, or, you know, you can take any number of things. It's just ridiculous because it's a drug, because it's related to addiction, and it's always been, you know, seen as a moral weakness. And, it's ridiculous. I mean, there's no point in, I mean, addicts are going to use, you know, and even if you can be all for, against drugs and substance abuse, but the fact of the matter is, and you, if you're like that, work towards getting these people, people clean, but, and, you know, this is a great place for outreach, you know, people will come here. I mean, look at this door, there's tons of services offered, you know, to get hooked up. Everybody here is here to help, you know, so it's a great first point of contact for people that want to get clean. A lot of these people are on the streets, you know, they don't have nowhere to go. Like, I do have the luxury of going to the VA, but people don't have nothing. And, you know, just because they have a sickness, an illness, they shouldn't be forced to live in squalor, or they're already forced to live in squalor, but they shouldn't be forced to basically be punished by risk of infection because of a sickness.
Right.
So
I agree with you wholeheartly, man. It's ridiculous. You know, what was it like, the doctors, when they diagnosed you, what was it like dealing with them?
At first, I mean, to be honest, at that point, when I first got diagnosed, I wasn't even willing to hear anything. They started to schedule me for a liver ultrasound, I guess, which was the first step. They did me a referral to the liver clinic, and I just blew it off. I wasn't caring. At that point, I was pretty much trying to hurt myself. Over the past year or so, as I've tried to, you know, deal with my issues a lot more, it's been a little bit hard, especially with the VA, because they have, with this cure they have now, the rules they have are very strict. You know, you have to have a certain amount of clean time to even qualify to go to it because of the risk of reinfection, and that kind of turns a lot of people off, you know. So things are slowly changing for the better, but it's a long way to go.
Yeah. You know, so one of the things, I kind of talked to you about this earlier, we talked about the VA and the rule of so much time clean. And it's not just the VA, it's, you know, Medicaid, they also have the rule. And, you know, my view on it is that, you know, if a person is actively using, but they're practicing harm reduction, why shouldn't they be treated? Because the risk of reinfection is low to none. What do you think about that?
Well, I can see where some people come from, especially when it comes to federal money. You know, this is our money that's being spent, and I can understand that if somebody is still engaging in these risky behaviors. However, if you're going to put up barriers to stop them from risky behaviors by not allowing needle exchanges and things like that, you can't expect a person to be punished. That's another way of punishing addicts. You know, you can't get clean supplies to stay safe while you're in your addiction. And if you do get it, because you don't have access to this, then we're not even going to help you get well, even though we can, because you might get it again, you know. But like you said, if someone is in active addiction and continues to be, if you're providing them with resources like this, then like you said, the practicing this harm reduction would stop it. It's not stopping the drug use that's going to stop it. It's making sure that people that are using drugs are doing it in the safest or cleanest way, or are doing it that have the most advantages to the public health. It's a lot better for, you know, addicts to not be spreading diseases than it is for us to be spreading diseases, you know? It's right. Not like, you know, it's not just the addicts you're punishing, it's the families. I had to suffer because my family had hepatitis C way before I ever picked up a drug. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, you make a lot of good points, and so we know about, you know, your barriers to getting treatment and treatment for hepatitis C. And you told me a little bit about, you know, what your plan was. You care to talk about that?
I'm working on it now. I'm waiting for a liver consult from the VA. I'm waiting to hear back. They do have it scheduled. They have worked a little bit to try to work with us and ease some of those restrictions. But like I said, it's federal money and they have to answer to rich old conservatives, I guess. Okay. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But
I don't think conservatives is the word you want to use, right. But we'll go with it. Okay. So, Kayla, we're about to wrap up. You know, before we close out, I want to ask you to give some advice. What would you say to anyone who is currently in an addiction, they're hepatitis C positive? Or they don't know whether or not they're hepatitis C positive because they haven't been tested. What advice should you give that person who's struggling? What words of encouragement would you give?
Just try to find resources. They're out there. I've been in cities where needle exchanges are illegal, but they look around, ask people. They do have people. Don't, I mean, you're dealing with people who buy and sell drugs. There are people out there that are willing to help you get it because, I mean, you may not care about yourself, but I mean, this can affect a lot of other people, and one day you will care about, you know, one day, you know, it may be too late, and you don't, and it's just, I mean, be safe as much as possible. Okay. And other people should be more open-minded, and if you really are concerned about public health, then, you know, given an addict, you worry about drunk driving, but you don't stop selling beer, you know.
So that's a good point.
You don't stop putting seatbelts in cars, you know, all that stuff. So
that's a good point.
I don't know.
You know, you make a lot of good points, and Caleb, we definitely thank you for your time here today, and you be safe and have a good weekend.
Thank you.